Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I am Jim Browdy, and she is Marjorie Egan. Here with us in Studio 3 for our, I guess you call it Spy versus Spy edition of our weekly news quiz is private investigator John DiNatale, senior partner of DiNatale Detective Agency. He's also author of a book I just got this morning and started reading. It's great. It's called My Family Business, Memoirs of a Boston Private Eye. John, good to meet you.
My pleasure.
Nice trench coat. Now, we're also joined by private investigator Sarah Alcorn. She's the owner of Greystone's Investigation. She's also the author of a forthcoming novel called A Lonely Business. Nice to see you, Sarah.
Thank you.
What's that going to be about?
That is a about a female private investigator.
What a shock that is.
I know. I don't know where I get this stuff from. And it is there's an overarching case that she's working on, and she has smaller sort of satellite cases, and it's just a way of getting the good narrative you get in this business and putting it in a book. And she has trouble with men, and, you know, I don't know where I get this stuff from.
That sounds great.
And, John, this is a family business. You talk about when you in your book, which is down on the floor there.
The family business, Boston Private Eye.
Yes, that you started as a young kid going out with your dad, and you had a little adventure there on the Back Bay. Tell people about that.
Well, my dad started at our agency in 1968, and he was a former Boston police detective, as was his father, who went on the force in 1919. And he also had four brothers who were all police officers and a cousin, Tony, who was the chief of detectives in Police Department. So my dad was involved in the Boston Strangler investigation. And when he left the department in 68, he didn't have a job, and he did what he did best and opened a detective agency. And I was his first employee. So he would take me out, and basically I learned how to drive and follow people at the same time. And that was my first surveillance case that winter night in January of 1969.
You were following an alleged adulterer. Did you catch him?
We actually did, but it wasn't that big of a deal.
Oh.
He met somebody that night, but, you know, they just had a drink, and then he went back on his way. But it was a beginning.
You talk about Sarah going out to look for someone whose husband who called and thought his wife was having an affair. What was she really doing?
Oh, she was going to every home goods store. Basically it was totally innocuous what this woman was doing.
To get away from him.
To get away from him, exactly.
Yeah. Well, you can
exactly
see where that happens with husbands and wives. And I hate to be sexist about it, too, but I don't think of private detectives as being women. That is rather sexist of me.
You can say yes to that.
Well, I think, though, without sounding gender biased, I do think oftentimes people will speak to women sometimes more easily than they will speak to a man.
That's a great point. I've always thought that was true being a reporter, too, that they're more likely to open up to women than to men. Okay, we're ready to start.
No, we're not, because we have
very
important
thing. She's exactly right.
Yeah. She is?
Oh, absolutely.
So what the hell are you doing here?
Well, I've got a very attractive staff working for me.
You do?
I do, including my wife.
Is that so?
Yes. My dad hired her in 1977, a year after I started.
That's pretty great.
Yeah.
Hey, so one thing that just happened recently, we'd like a very quick response from both of you to see how you do on your feet. If you heard a radio talk show host, unnamed, this is a hypothetical, say she had a dream in which she murdered the former editor of the Boston Phoenix, who happened to be her third floor tenant, and let's say his name was Peter Kazis, who now works
at WGBH.
What would you do to see if there was any truth behind that woman, Marjorie Egan's admission that she had that dream? What would you do to see if that was anything more than a dream?
We just had this conversation.
Sarah.
That's why he mentioned
yes. Well, no, we just happened to have. Would you follow up on that, Sarah? What would you do to see if there was any reality to what was purportedly a dream?
Oh my God! Talk about being on the spot. I'm gonna defer to John.
Okay, how about it, John? What would you do in that circumstance? You heard that story on the radio. Do you say to your colleagues, "There's more there than Marjorie Egan is saying"? What do you say?
Knowing Marjorie, I would say there was more. There.
Exactly.
No question about that.
Excellent private detective work.
I've been plotting. If Peter Kazis shows up dead, you'll know where to look.
I mean, I just see the look in her face right now. I mean, a good investigator really is looking more at behavioral answers than they are what's coming out of your mouth. So you can just tell.
I look suspicious?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, shall we get started here?
Okay.
Start with a quiz. Who do you want to ask your questions of, Marjorie?
I'll ask Sarah.
Okay.
Girl to girl here. Here's
Fine.
A newscast from Toledo, Ohio. Why does it apply to Boston? We'll play it.
Welcome back, everyone. Hey, check out this video right behind me. Now, the victim is blurred to protect her identity, but you see that guy right next to her? You know what he's doing? He's actually taking a picture up the women's skirt, according to police. And CBS 5's Elizabeth Irwin is live in our newsroom with a straight story. And Elizabeth, we understand that this has got a catchy name to this creepy crime.
Unfortunately, it does seem. It's called upskirting.
Okay. Why does that story apply to Boston?
There was just a ruling that I understand that it's allowed. I can't believe it.
It's too easy. I'm sorry, judges. That's too easy. You got to have a follow-up question, which is, and what has happened in the 36 hours since we heard about the decision?
Oh, boy. That I don't know.
You get a half point for the first one. So the other half point goes to you if you know John DiNatale. Do you know what the answer to that one is?
Our lazy legislature got off their duffs and decided to do their job and quickly passed a bill.
I know. It was lightning fast.
After they got slapped in the
face
by
one day,
the SJC.
The governor signed it today.
Someone predicted that they would change it immediately, and someone here said that wouldn't happen.
That would be me.
Correct.
I said it would never happen in a day. Actually, they debated it, passed it in a day, and the governor signed it this morning. So the
funny
law,
what happens when they decide to do their job.
Right? Yeah, it is amazing. So we know where John DiNatale stands on Beacon Hill.
Okay, next question to John.
Okay, John, you ready for this?
Okay.
Okay, a foreign dignitary got his Italian a little mixed up this week and ended up accidentally swearing to a crowd assembled to hear him. Here's an excerpt from what he had to say.
In questo caso la provvidenza di Dio si rende visibile in quanto gesto di solidarietà.
Now this is a great story. Who is this man who accidentally F-bombed in Italian and obviously didn't know that he was doing it? Who would that have been?
Was that the Pope?
That was the Pope. The Pope confused two very similar words in Italian, one meaning case or example, and the other was the F. Where I didn't know about that story till
he's
this morning. That's pretty great.
All sorts of boundaries, isn't he? Pope Francis. You never know what he's going to do next. Okay, Sarah, ready for your next question?
Sure.
Listen to this news report, then tell us what ingredient Chipotle is running short of.
The Chipotle Mexican grill chain, known for their inextricable link to local farm-grown produce, says that climate change could affect some of their key ingredients, namely... In their recent annual report, they state that increasing weather volatility or other long-term changes in global weather patterns should have a significant impact on the price or availability of some of our ingredients. Currently, they use about 100,000 pounds of to make their tasty every single day.
Okay, you know what?
I'm going to guess avocado.
You are correct.
Woo-hoo!
The food chain predicts a guacapocalypse due to global warming. That's really distressing.
That is a problem.
It is.
Guacamole is one of the best things ever.
I think one of the two of you should get to the bottom of this, is what
okay,
I think.
One of the two should get to the bottom of this. Now, so I want to know, when I think of private detectives, you always think, that's what you think of. You think of people in getting divorced, and one husband is looking out for the wife or the vice versa. Is that really the bulk of what you
well,
do?
Well, it's no fault now. No, does that
50
even matter?
Years ago it was when we first started.
Yeah.
But now, I would say we handled maybe 450 cases last year. Five of them were marital cases.
Wow. So what is the bulk of what you do?
We do a lot of work for insurance companies. We do a lot of work for law firms, private corporations, a lot of background investigations, due diligence, pre-employments. We run the whole gamut. We work a lot with trial attorneys in preparing for whether they be civil or criminal trials. So that's what most investigators do today.
Yeah. You too, Sarah? Same
That's
for you?
That's right. The bulk of what I do is also criminal defense work. I work for a lot of attorneys. I am at the occasional surveillance.
Well, there was a great piece about you in the Globe. It talked about a police report that was falsified in a particular case. What was that? Tell people that story.
I'm not sure if it was falsified. If it's the one I'm thinking of.
Drug deal.
Oh, yes. There was a police report in which the police... claim that they saw this drug deal from an enormous distance away, and there was a row. I went with the attorney, and we went and looked at the scene, and there was a row of evergreen trees right in the way of where the police officer allegedly was, and it's just impossible. He showed that it was impossible that anyone could have physically been able to see a drug transaction.
So it wasn't falsified. It was just a misstatement.
Yeah, it was lazy. It was falsified is a strong word. I think it was just a fairy tale.
Okay. How often, hey, Sarah, how often are you scared?
Not very often. I don't scare easy.
Would actually. Normal people be who don't do what you do, if we were thrown into the same situation, I'm going to ask you this, John, in a minute too, where would we be scared in many of the circumstances you find yourself in, but you're just used to them?
Well, I go to some pretty scary neighborhoods, and I knock on some pretty scary doors. I have had scary. I had one woman who answered the door with a huge pit bull and brandished the pit bull at me and said, your client is the reason why I have this dog. And the dog's jaws were, inches from me kind of thing.
That wasn't scary at all.
No.
So how about you, John? Are you ever scared or no?
Generally not.
But it happens?
Sure, absolutely. Absolutely.
Like
how do you deal with that?
What was the scary thing?
Oh, going way back, probably some 25, 30 years ago, one of the few times that I actually put the gun in my hand and felt that where I was going to be in danger. And actually excused myself, went into the bathroom, took my gun out, put it in my pocket so I wasn't going to have to start looking for anything.
Wow. And,
but that's really the exception to the rule.
I
haven't carried a gun probably in at least 5 years, although I have a permit to carry it. But I like to think I have a PhD in people after some 45 years of doing this. And
well, don't
10,
you have to do what you do well?
Absolutely.
I mean, to be successful,
so,
your business.
So I kind of, you get a sense as to who you're dealing with. I mean, and the old expression is you can find trouble if you're looking for it. But, we're generally places where maybe we shouldn't be. But for the most part, I have a sense of the city. I know where I am. Mm. I know basically how far I can push things with people. And, I know when to retreat and I know when to charge.
I feel the same way. I think what we do is a lot like being a journalist. It's almost like being a modern day anthropologist. You are going into people's houses. I've been in thousands of people's houses, and I'm sure John has too. And you, I think if you conduct yourself with a certain amount of respect and a certain amount of earnestness, that's what people respond to.
So I think you both answered this question already, but I wondered how the digital, the social media, the tweets, the Facebooking, et cetera, would affect your business. But it sounds like you need to do a lot of face-to-face work, so it might not.
Well, for background stuff, that stuff is invaluable.
Yeah.
And it is still amazing to me what people will put out
online.
There in the public forum.
I know,
basically.
It is amazing.
Yeah.
If either of you had wanted to find out what the questions were in this quiz prior to the quiz that was written early this morning, would you have been able to I'm serious about that. Would you have been able to find out what the questions were? Sarah, let's start with you. She has a nervous look on her face. What's the answer to the question? So I guess the answer is yes. How about you, John?
Money talks.
Okay, John, here's your question. You ready?
Yep.
Here is Brookline Kid, Conan O'Brien, taking on a headline from earlier this week.
I have some big news. Today, Washington, D.C. voted to We're already seeing the effects at the Lincoln Memorial. The statue of Lincoln is now sitting on a beanbag chair. He's got Dorito dust in his beard. Yeah.
So the question for you, John DiNatale, is what did D.C. vote on this particular week? What is that?
Decriminalizing marijuana.
That is exactly correct. Even though there was a question in your voice, the answer was totally was correct.
Okay.
What's the score after two rounds, judges? Could you share with us? John, you're up 2.5 to 1.5. Plenty of time to come back, Sarah.
Okay, ready, Sarah? Here's Jim's colleague from NECN, Alicia Palumbo, reporting from Cambridge earlier this week.
There are several road closures in and around Harvard Square, including Bennett Street, where the Charles Hotel is located, and nearby Elliott Street. There has been a very heavy police presence in the area, including the Cambridge Police Bomb Squad and Incident Command Vehicle.
Okay, you know why there was so much security in the People's Republic of Cambridge?
Yes, President Obama came to visit.
That is correct. Emily Rooney, our colleague, was just complaining about the traffic jam that he caused with all his Secret Service running around.
Okay, here's a question for you, John DiNatale, who has written a book called The Family Business, Memoirs of a Boston Private Eye. And by the way, Sarah, not to be outdone, has a novel coming out. When's it coming out, by the way?
Oh, it is not published yet.
When are you thinking? Are you working on it, you mean?
I am. It's done. It's ready. I need a publisher.
Fine. Okay. So. If anybody out there wants to publish A Lonely Business, give her a buzz.
Please.
Here is your question. What retail chain is Conan O'Brien yet again, all local, talking about in this clip, John?
Plans to close 1,000 stores throughout the U.S.
Oh.
Yeah. Customers were very upset when they got the news on their pagers.
So what chain are they talking about that's doing all that closing? John?
Radio Shack.
That is exactly right. Would you get a beep for that ding, ding, ding? Thank you very much.
These are two newsreaders. There's no question
What's
about
that?
It.
Apparently
these,
they
two
are.
Two newsreaders were here.
Okay.
Okay. You ready, Sarah?
Yes.
What distinction does Bill Gates once again enjoy? Here is Diane Sawyer with a hint.
Tonight, Gates is back on top of the annual unseating Mexico's Carlos Slim, who had held the spot for 4 years. Overall, the U.S. has the most right now, 492, including Warren Buffett, number 4, Google's co-founders, number 17 and 19, and Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg coming in at 21.
Okay, do you know what?
He's got to be the richest dude in the world.
That is
the richest dude. That's what they said
with
on
an
Forbes.
Estimated Jeez. Net worth of $72 billion. Wow.
Give or take a few, right?
Give or take. That's right. That's right. Oh, that's unbelievable.
Okay, John, here's your chance to regain the lead. What Obama proposal would Jimmy Fallon be talking about right here?
President Obama just released his for 2015. And one of the biggest complaints conservatives have is that's more of a liberal wish list, they're saying. Let's take a look at some of these items and see what you guys think. $4 billion to turn all school buses into really long yellow Priuses. That's, I don't see how that. He also earmarked $1.5 million for rescuing every dog in that Sarah McLachlan commercial. I can get behind that. Very, very sad. And then finally, he put aside $80 million to round up all guns, melt them down, and turn them into pens to sign gay marriage licenses.
So the question was, what Obama proposal was Fallon talking about, John DiNatale, please?
His budget proposal?
That is right. President Obama's 2015 budget released just this week. Okay, now we enter the bonus round, you two. And by the way, we're talking to Sarah Alcorn and John DiNatale, who are both private detectives in Boston. She with Greystone's investigation and he with the family business, the DiNatale Detective Agency. Ready, you guys? Since the theme of today is spy versus spy, we're going to ask you about the comic strip Spy versus Spy, which, of course, debuted in Mad Magazine in 1961. Why don't we switch the order? You ask
okay,
John,
I'll
Marjorie.
Do John this time. Right, here we go, John. How did the creator of Spy versus Spy sign his strip? This is multiple choice. A, he wrote his name backwards. B, he wrote it in Morse code. Or C, he wrote it so small you needed a magnifying glass to read it.
I guess C.
Nope.
Hey, Sarah,
guess,
here's
Sarah?
Your chance. A or B?
Oh, I'll go with B.
B is correct. He wrote it in
Morse. Whoa, no whining there, judges. That was correct, Marjorie.
Yeah, he wrote it in Morse code.
He did.
That's right.
Do you remember that column, that cartoon strip?
I just remember the guy on Mad Magazine, the little redheaded guy. With
they
that.
Look
Alfred
like,
E. Newman.
They look like opossums.
They
yeah.
do. Actually,
they
that's,
really
that is very
look
good.
Like, yeah.
Look
they
like
did.
Opossums.
They did.
Give her a point. No, don't give her a point for that.
Is that still around, Mad Magazine?
I think it is, actually.
I don't know.
Is it? I think it is. I'm not sure. In any case,
either.
Sarah, here's your deal. You ready?
Sure.
The black spy and white spy in Spy versus a Spy appear in a commercial. Which of these is the actual ad that they appear in? A, a Mountain Dew ad. 2, a Ralph Nader campaign ad. Or C, a Norton anti-spyware ad. What would be the answer?
Have to go with C.
That would be incorrect. Now, John, here's your opportunity to steal the question. Is it Mountain Dew ad, which is A, or a Ralph Nader campaign ad? What's the answer?
A.
That is correct. That is absolutely correct. Now, we should really, since it's our final question, give it to Sarah. If she gets it right, it ends a tie. If she gets it wrong, John can do a victory lap around the studio.
Okay. All right. Here we go, Sarah. Spy versus Spy was censored only once by Mad publisher William Gaines. Why was this? A, a fierce animal rights advocate, he censored a strip where the spies cuts of a lion, where the spy cuts off a lion's tail. B, a fierce supporter of Cesar Chavez, he censors a strip that has a bowl of fruit brimming with grapes. Or C, having a fierce anti-smoking stance, he censors a strip where the spies are smoking.
I'll say C again.
You are correct. It is where the spies are smoking. Oh, so it's a tie. I love ties.
How competitive is your business? You're both treating each other very nicely. You're smiling at each other and you're complimenting each other. How competitive is this business? Sarah?
I think people find their niches. And I'm blessed with a very faithful client base. So
what's your niche?
My niche is just, well, all around criminal defense. I've been doing it for 15 years.
So that means you go out and try to prove the defense's case, try to poke holes in the prosecution's case?
Essentially what you're doing is you are trying to find out what people are going to say on the stand. So good, bad, or indifferent. You know, that's what it is. If you can find things that are helpful for the client, great.
Can we ask you how you got involved in this to begin with? We know John has a family business, obviously started by his father.
This is a good story.
What is it?
This has to do with our mutual friend, David Prum.
David Prum is a very good friend of mine who's also a private detective whom you know.
Yes. And both David and I went to Harvard.
Mm-hmm.
And Is this on?
It's on, yes.
Oh, sorry.
It turns off automatically whenever you say Harvard, but then it comes back on.
Probably a prudent move on your part. So we both went to Harvard, and so through Harvard connections, I met him. Mm. And he tried to dissuade me, said, you don't want to be involved in this business. And he took me to one of the worst sort of projects, you know, on a murder case. And it was, you know, and he tried to dissuade me from, you know, getting in this business, and I was hooked right away.
Really?
So, yes.
Right out of college?
No. I went to Hollywood first, and that's another whole other chapter in my life.
To do what? So what did you do?
I worked on sets, and I was a set decorator and a production designer and that kind of thing. I've had every fun, non-lucrative career you can think of.
So last question for you. Since you have a family business, John DiNatale, is the next generation of DiNatales going to be private detectives, or does it end with you?
Ended with me.
Really?
Ended with me. Well, I have a brother who's my partner, Richard, and he has a son, his youngest son, Connor, who could be a potential to come in and step in. But I have two daughters. One is in the real estate business and the other is in communications business, public relations. And, you know, they love what I do, but they like to watch it from afar.
Fair enough.
And I'm happy.
Hey, you guys were great.
Thank you. Congratulations
and thanks so much.
For being here. Private investigator John DiNatale is senior partner at DiNatale Detective Agency and author of My Family Business, Memoirs of a Boston Private Eye. Private investigator Sarah Alcorn, owner of Greystone's Investigation, is author of the forthcoming novel, A Lonely Business. Thanks again, John and Sarah, for being here.